seen anything like that.
I'm a very confident front runner for Caddy for 33 years, 145 wins now, and that's the best win I've ever had.
I have no idea what you have.
I don't know. How are we going to count all the shots? I can't keep track.
Fuck! God damn it!
I don't think he's pleased.
Of course you would. That's a particularly stupid question. It's the Irish Open. Of course you want to play at the weekend.
You are welcome along to another Golf Weekly. We are busy today. There is much to talk about. Nathan Murphy is here. Hello.
Hey, Joe.
And Dave McIntyre here. Hello.
Hey, boys.
We're into the sweet spot of the season now. We've been waiting for this. It's the Rolex Series. I know you're very excited about this, Nathan.
Well, I'm very excited. Yeah, French Open this week. One of the best courses on the European Tour schedule. Le Golf National.
$7 million prize fund.
For all of these, minimum. Mm. So we have French Open this week, the Open next week. /Irish Open next week, Scottish Open the week after that, all leading into the Open Championship.
We are with thanks to our good friends, Dubai Duty Free, Irish Open, very much our partners here in the pod over the last number of weeks. And we have news of a competition. We want to do this right off the bat because this is a great competition and we specifically want Golf Weekly winners to win.
Yes. Well, they're listening to this, so they are going to win, mm-hmm. is okay. How it's going to work.
Right.
We'll, at the end of this, we'll give you news of how you can come along and maybe see us there on the Friday night. But thanks to our very good friends, as you mentioned, the Dubai Duty Free Irish Open, hosted by the Rory Foundation. Don't forget that, Joe. Sure. We want to send the best golf fans in Ireland, Golf Weekly listeners, to the best golf event of the year. You will be driven to and from Port Stewart. You will pick up a goodie bag on arrival. You'll take in the full Friday of golf, seeing your idols in the flesh.
Wow.
That's right. We'll be there.
Hey.
Boom.
That was good. It was good.
It's actually going to be off the ball, but I think we should all be there as well.
Hey.
You're going to be there. I think Fiona's going to be coming in on the Friday night also, seems to be the plan.
It seems I'm stuck giving Fiona a lift over 4 hours.
Oof.
Is the latest news, but we'll see what we can do about that.
I'm currently working on my pass. And it's not the accreditation to get into the golf course.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
So how do people enter this once-in-a-lifetime competition?
That show, by the way, is going to be live in the Port Stewart Golf Club House that night.
I can't believe they're letting us in.
I know. And they're letting our listeners in as well.
Yeah.
So we have 3 pairs of tickets to give away on today's podcast.
Right.
In fact, I think we've 5 pairs of tickets. Let's go 5 pairs of tickets. It's a big bus. It's going to be fully branded in Irish Open, a giant Rory McIlroy picture on the side.
Yeah.
It's going to pick you up in Dublin City Centre.
That's a 66% increase in tickets you just did there.
I just did it. That's just where I roll.
Just on a whim.
Just on a whim. 5 pairs of tickets we're giving away to Golf Weekly listeners.
What's it like to yield that kind of power?
Well, I just realised I'm not going to give them 2 pairs of tickets to my mates. I'm going to give them to the Golf Weekly listeners.
Okay.
It seems only fair. Tweet, hashtag friend of the pod. To @GolfWeeklyNT and @DDFIrishOpen for a chance to win. Simple as that.
So all they have to do is tweet #FriendOfThePod.
Yeah.
And
to GolfWeeklyNT and @DDFIrishOpen and then you're in with a chance. We'll pick the winners pretty quickly. We'll pick the winners Saturday or Sunday. And what we'll do then is...
You have to include both handles.
Both handles have to be included. You will need to be available for the full day on Friday week. So this is for the second round, July 7th. Mm-hmm. You need to be able to travel from Dublin. The bus, we'll send you on all the details. Probably going to leave Dublin at 7 o'clock in the morning.
Sure.
So you get up, you'll see the end of the early starters, all the late starters. Then we'll meet you at the clubhouse. We'll bring you in for the live show and we'll send you on a bus back and you're going to get some merchandise and you can get some autographs and
excellent,
all that sort of stuff. It is all with thanks to Dubai Duty Free Irish Open. Check out shop.europeantour.com for more. And also, we'll do this next week when we're doing the podcast up there. Because we're doing the show on the Friday night from the clubhouse, there's going to be a bit of space. So if you're there at the tournament on the Friday and you want to come along and see the show and you've got your own tickets and all that sort of stuff, we'll make some space for Golf Weekly listeners
as well.
So we'll let you know about that maybe next Thursday. If you're there on the Friday anyways, you can come along. It'll be, I think, from 7 o'clock to 8 o'clock.
Okay, so if you're there next week, be sure to listen to the podcast next week and we'll give details on how maybe some extra listeners can come along.
And remember, and everybody's backswing, friend of the pod.
So, competition, very exciting. One other point is that we're going up next week, obviously, to Port Stewart and we're looking at our schedule. And we think maybe there's a window on Friday morning to get some golf in. And it would be nice to golf in that part of the world.
Where?
Well, that's the problem, Nathan. We got nowhere. We got nowhere near Port Stewart to golf.
Are there any good golf clubs near Port Stewart that we could go and play in?
I don't know.
I don't know anybody up there, so...
I've no contacts. I've no...
We'll just have to look online and see if we book somewhere.
There are many very good golf clubs in the area, but we don't usually go cap in hand as a podcast.
And that's not what this is. We're just letting it be known.
We're just letting it be known that, like, maybe we'll just have to go to the driving range on Friday morning, a group outing to the range.
Yeah.
And, like, maybe that's what we need.
But, look, if golf happened to make itself available on Friday morning. That would suit our schedule.
Well, we'd definitely give a consideration.
Strong consideration. So, look, here's hoping.
Maybe even Saturday morning.
Maybe Saturday morning too.
Or both.
Like a lot of courses.
We'll just have to leave that stew there and see what comes of it. Now, up next, we're getting to your tweets. After that competition excitement, let's get to your tweets. Aaron Grantham sent a picture of him and a couple of his friends duffnering on the course, where you sit down, like Jason Duffner, very famously, because they had finished their, what they call their Macmillan longest day on Friday, where they played four courses, 72 holes in one day. They sent the picture of the Duffner pose on course number three of the day. Never done 72 in a day myself.
No, 36, I'd say, is... actually, I lie, 27 is the most I've ever played.
27 as well.
Yeah. And usually the 27 is when you finish on 18, you go, oh, I'd love to keep going. And then you play the next night, you're like, oh, a bit tired now, to be honest. 18 was probably enough.
Well, our extra night was after a couple of pints and some lunch. So we were refueled, re-energised.
Right. Did you play better golf?
I often did it at Killeen Castle, at 27.
Right.
You know, you're sitting in there, you're with degenerates like Fionn Davenport and Paul Faraday, who's a member there, and they've nowhere good to be. And so we go in, long lunch, and then, we wander out again. Yeah. But it's hard to go beyond 27.
I've just recalled I did play 36. I played a comp in Balcarrick in the morning.
Oh, yeah.
With a friend of mine, and we were just in the zone, desperate to play some golf. Just went on to teatimes.ie, found a comp up the road in Rogenstown, made the trip, played that in the afternoon.
And did you play better in the evening?
I did, yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
72 in one day, I mean, I don't even know how that's possible, but fair play.
I assume it's for charity. Macmillan's the big cancer charity in England, isn't it? So I presume it's a charity outing.
Kenny Vaughan tweeted, check out who dropped by my brother's pub in Hartford on Friday night at the Travellers Championship. I'm reliably informed he wasn't scooping. And it was a picture of Padraig Carrington, who popped in, got a picture behind the bar looking very happy. Dave Tyrrell, who sent us a picture of Dave Tyrrell on holidays. There's a nice swimming pool there. Lads, thanks for the pod. No club for 2 weeks. No clubs for 2 weeks.
Relax.
Enjoy that very, very crowded swimming pool. I mean, there was no room for an adult in this pool. It was just like a billion kids. Peak season. Mark Sheehan, want to know what this is about. He replies to the Golf Weekly pod last week and says, at Malloy Joe, the surprise birthday master. My personal life being discussed on the airways?
No, wouldn't be.
Join the club, Joe. Something I have a great deal of experience in. Yeah, we did go into some detail.
Okay. You'll be thrilled to know the surprise birthday party went incredibly well. Total surprise. Everybody made it. Venue was perfect.
Where'd you have it?
The Trinity Inn Pub, which is a pub on Pier Street that is just used for private events. They only open for lunch in the daytime, and then it's only for private hire after that. So it was great. Everybody there, my parents, her parents, friends, family.
We were initially upset, but then Fionn said he wasn't invited. He filled us in on all the details.
As long as Fionn wasn't there, we didn't really bother us. I guess you kind of get offers from all these kinds of places all the time, given your profile.
They
didn't even have to pay.
Paid me to have it there. Yeah. And then we went to Paris for a few days. It was good. The highlight of Paris, by the way, if you're going in the summer, was we rented a scooter. It was the only way to get around when it's that hot. It was 38 degrees on the Wednesday. Ooh. It was like you were in an oven and somebody just turned up past the point of where it was bearable. It was just like, it was simmering. I mean, it was absolutely...
I wouldn't complain, considering we spent 5 weeks in Paris last summer and the sun shone on maybe one day.
True, yeah. But it was proper 38 degrees. I don't think I had 38 degrees in a city like that before. Mm. So we got so tired and wrecked, we said, let's rent a scooter. And it was the only way to get around. It meant you avoided the subway and you got this beautiful, cool breeze as you just crisscross.
Sounds very romantic.
Across Paris. It was very romantic. On the second night, we went out for dinner, and I said, "You know what?"
What did you say, Joe?
I said, "I love this. I love driving this thing around Paris so much. I don't really care that much about drinking tonight."
It's an awful thing to say.
I'm driving us to dinner, so we hopped on we threw on our helmets in the Parisian darkness and scooted around to where we were having dinner. It was great. I recommend it.
No other news.
No other news. Do you want the? This is crossing
the
line.
You're probably as well to go with it because we probably crossed the line last week.
Did you? Okay, so naturally everybody said, oh, proposal. I mean, it was the standard response when I said it was.
Well, why else would you go to Paris?
Yeah.
Because we'd never been and it was our surprise birthday.
You were there last year.
We'd never been together. What I've done here is I have said to her, if that day ever happens, the proposal day, it will not happen on foreign shores. It will only happen in Ireland. Whenever we're going away, I don't want you worrying. I don't want you thinking, right, is this going to happen? Is it not going to happen? I've had a few friends who tell tales of flights home from New York or flights home from romantic cities where girlfriends are in tears on the flight home. Such was the level of expectation. Oh, all their friends, all their friends were saying, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. This is going to be the weekend.
I'd just be seriously questioning, ultimately, is this the woman I want to spend the rest of my life with? If she's in tears on a flight home because she didn't get a ring.
She might have been really expecting it and the proposal didn't come and maybe she'd been building herself up.
All her friends are telling her in the build up, it's definitely going to happen. It's definitely going to happen.
Work friends who know nothing about your relationship. Oh, it's going to happen. It's going to happen. It's the pressure. And then if you come back and say, no, it didn't happen. I didn't give too much thought to being the female in these instances, but it is, I suppose, not ideal. You don't know when it's going to happen. So I've said, so that we can always enjoy any trips. So it's going to happen in Ireland if it's going to happen.
And now, the local chipper.
Far be it from me.
I'm doing it in a really classy way, like drunk on New Year's Eve. That's the way it's done, right?
Or for Dave McIntyre to judge, because clearly Keavy at this age knows you and understands you. I do just wonder as you go, just so we're clear, we will not be getting engaged if this happens.
It wasn't when I do it, it won't be on foreign shores. If you're lucky enough for this to ever happen.
I think it's a very considerate thing to have said, actually.
Yeah, considerate for you.
No, for her. What if you were thinking, is this going to happen? You're under a lot of pressure from friends and then you're disappointed. A part of you is disappointed.
Because then she has to tell her mates, no, he's already told me it's not going to happen.
Yeah. He said definitely not. He said, if it ever happens.
I do accept there was a certain arrogance in me saying this to her as well. I'm sure you're, you know, waiting on tender hooks for this question from me, just so you're not worried about Paris.
What was her response, if you wish to tell us?
I think she said, I'll live.
What sort of tone, though?
Get over yourself kind of a tone.
Okay.
She was just, we had a great time. Everyone else, proposal. You know, everybody else putting pressure on it. And it was great. There was free jazz concerts all over the city on the Wednesday evening. It's the kind of cool thing Parisians do, you know.
Did you go up the Eiffel Tower?
No. We went and hung around it and looked at the queues during the day and said, nah. And then on the way home from dinner on the evening, we scooted by around midnight and the lights were on.
Ah,
it was all good stuff, yeah. So that's my recommendation. Get a scooter and try and avoid the crazy drivers.
Don't get engaged.
Anyway, Mark Sheehan, the surprise birthday master. Yeah, so the surprise birthday went well. Kirk Russell was tweeting somebody looking for golf podcasts and he said, try at Golf Weekly NT for golf irreverence, which I took exception to. We're very serious about the golf. We've had Brandel Chamblee on. We've had Butch Harmon on. Rich Beam on. We've had Paul McGilney on. Shane Lowry.
There could be a serious element to Golf Weekly.
I just don't think
but
we
there
should
there is an irreverence that is one of the bedrocks of this podcast.
Sure. But we are serious about our golf. I would have liked if Kirk, not to be pedantic, said golf irreverence and serious golf talk.
Look, he sent another listener our way.
Sure. I accept that. Thanks, Kirk, ultimately. Bobby
I
Donnelly.
I think there's a lot of the other type of golf podcasts, though.
The boring ones. Straight,
the boring, technical
ones. Who wants that?
Ones.
Bobby Donnelly was listening last week. Obviously impressed with you in particular. He said, Nathan is on it this week. Hashtag friend of the pod. Was Nathan especially good last week?
Was I on last week's pod?
You were, Dave.
I can't remember.
US Open Review.
US Open Review. US Open Review was fine, I think, wasn't it?
I don't...
We didn't chat at you. We chatted a lot about Phil and Bones.
Oh, we did. Well, you see, I was so scarred by the Phil and Bones breakup that I've blotted the rest of the pod out of my mind.
Well, Carvalho tweeted to say that the analysis was very harsh on Brooks Koepka. For a kid to win his first major, not his fault if others weren't up to the challenge, it showed Ricky how to close out. Were we harsh on Koepka?
No, I think we were harsh on the final day. We weren't even that harsh on the course. I think we sort of agreed that the course was interesting until you realised that the back nine, nothing could really go wrong.
Yeah.
There was no possibility of any drama. Mm. But Koepka fully deserved to win that tournament. He crushed the field.
Yeah, I think we gave him all the praise he deserved.
Okay. And it wasn't a freak. Like, this wasn't I don't want to say a Lucas Glover or a Todd Hamilton. Like, Koepka's been coming.
Yeah. A few people tweeting in as well about Donald Trump and enjoying his latest screw-up. So the Washington Post on Tuesday showed a Time magazine cover featuring Donald Trump from 2009. The headline on the Time magazine cover was, Donald Trump, The Apprentice is a Television Smash. And it was hanging at several of his golf clubs across the United States. The BBC as well have checked, and it was hanging up in Doonbeg as well as Turnberry in Scotland. Have you seen this story?
No.
All right, okay. So It's just a Time magazine
cover.
It's
very Donald Trump-esque.
It's unbelievable. Right. A Time magazine cover with Donald on the front from 09. Trump.
When The Apprentice was...
Yeah, it's a television smash. Yeah, yeah, yeah. And it says above that, Trump is hitting on all fronts, even TV.
Okay.
So about The Apprentice. It turns out it is a fake Time magazine cover.
Which you often see. People would often do
your
mock-up.
Birthday.
Exactly.
Yeah. It turns out that week, Kate Winslet was actually on the cover. Kerry Chica from the Time magazine said, I can confirm this is not a real Time cover. Time magazine have asked Donald Trump to remove the covers from display around his various golf clubs. Things which cottoned on the list, the people seeing the picture, the red line framing the page is too thin. It lacks the white line outside of the red, and the exclamation marks are all not where they usually are on a Time magazine cover. So Donald Trump went to the trouble of faking his own Time magazine cover, and now he's been rumbled.
But did Donald Trump do that, or did somebody do it on his behalf?
Don't know for sure. I'm sure Donald Trump is aware.
Yeah, are all, so does that mean all Trump's courses, so you said it's in Dubeg and it's in Doral and the various
Turnberry,
courses
yeah.
he owns around the world, that they all have the same decor?
I don't know. That's an interesting point. I can't think it's quite the same. Maybe there are certain standards they like to keep, like the Time magazine cover of Donald, chief amongst them. So that's what's going on there, though. I mean,
what about the driving all over the green?
Oh, yeah. Did you talk about that last week?
No, because I only saw it this week.
Oh, yeah. So Donald Trump in his car drives over the green. He's a terrible man.
Yeah, but you're the president of America. You
probably
own the course.
There's really no need, though. So anyway, people enjoying Donald Trump. Up next, we are talking about just the remarkable Jordan Spieth. So the golf at the weekend was pretty brilliant. It's everything the US Open were desperate to happen on their course. Jordan Spieth won the Travelers in Connecticut. He was the wire-to-wire leader, and it came down to a playoff. He went into the final round three clear. He shot a final day 70. We'll talk about that final round in a moment. And Berger shot a 67. So they went to a playoff, and ultimately Spieth chipped in from the bunker off 18.
Right at it. Right at it! Oh! He's done it again! Just as he did at the John Deere for his first win.
Unbelievable.
That sportsmanship right there.
Well, add that one to the list.
My
the Azinger
goodness.
Chip in, the Owen Brown chip in we spoke of, and
the long putt
by Nota Begay, and all these crazy things that have happened here, and that might just top them all.
And his first victory was with a hold bunker shot at the John Deere, maybe his 10th with this one.
And ultimately it was his 10th. The sportsmanship is Berger giving him a thumbs up as his heart broke.
A little kiss pump.
Yeah.
I like that, I have to say, because he must have been in an awful state thinking... Up and down here guarantees me another crack at it,
yeah.
Another playoff.
When that shot drops, I'm sitting in my, well, as it happens, I'm sitting down watching this in my sitting room. As it drops, I'm standing there, arms outstretched in front of the TV going, yes!
It was the most remarkable win for various reasons, not least the fact that from early on in the round, he couldn't hold a putt. He looked as uncomfortable on the greens as he ever has. I mean, it's been the story of the season. In some ways, he's now fallen this season to 40th in strokes gained putting, which is probably the worst he's ever been. But then on 13 and 15 in particular, he got so lucky. I mean, how he didn't go into water on both holes. God bless that heavy rough.
Yeah, the par 5 where he ended up, what was it, a yard? A yard and a half?
Yeah, in particular that one.
And you're right, the rough was very heavy there. Otherwise, he just would have toppled off into the water, and he managed to make something of it. But he did look a bit rocky on that back nine. There were a couple of bogeys in there. He couldn't buy a putt. Berger was making a run at it, and he kind of fell over the line here, which is maybe what he needed to do to get wherever the next win was going to come. But there was a lot of questions been asked of him, and he just barely got it done.
I was thinking, imagine if this was Ricky Fowler playing like this in a final round. He would be destroyed. Now, that's the sort of freedom you get when you're a two-time major winner and you've delivered as Spieth has. I never want to hear again that there's no such thing as luck in sport.
Yeah.
Because the drive on 13, how that did not bounce into the water, I will never know. And I would have loved to have seen the look he would have given Michael Greller if the shot on, was it 15 or 16?
15.
Had gone in the water, yeah. Having said to Greller, give me a club that won't reach the water.
I know.
Now, he did hook it.
In Greller's defence, he could turn it to him and say, well, you hooked the ass off it, so of course it's going to go an extra few yards. Mm. But yeah, Jordan Spieth mic'd up is one of the great things in sport. I mean, we're going to miss Phil and Bones talking, but Spieth is just so animated, so brilliant. Like, we were making the point, some people who don't watch golf very often think Spieth is boring. You combine the temperament with the wayward shots and the fact he's mic'd up makes him unbelievably brilliant.
Well, he's not mic'd up, though, is he?
No, but there's the mics just, are so good.
The mics are in his location. Yeah. They're in his vicinity.
There's mics in all the tee boxes and yeah. At various points in the course.
So and I could listen to it. I got really annoyed on Sunday night because I can't remember which of the commentators kept talking over Jordan Spieth and his caddy. Yeah. I was like, shut up.
Rule number
one.
And
he actually said, yeah, I know I'm talking over Jordan here. Don't do it. I want to hear what they're saying because it's far more interesting than you.
I know. The arrogance of a commentator to think what he is saying is more interesting.
He did it several times over the back nine.
Yeah.
They said at the start of the round as well that Spieth had wanted to sort of control his talking to the ball, that he had tried to cut back on it. That was out the window on that back nine. There was the moment where he picked up the iron and he put it right into his face and he's having a right old go at it. It's just the expression that we don't see from many golfers. And that was there in the celebration as well. Like, that was one of the great golf celebrations.
Yeah.
How do you describe that? What's the term for what they did? We see it on the NFL in the NFL all the time.
Jumping side bump.
Yeah. It was more frontal,
body
though.
Body pump. Mm.
I have some Jordan Spieth press conference for you. So he was in great form. He came in. He talked about how Greller was brilliant during the round and kept him in the round when he couldn't hold a putt. And then at one point, someone pipes up with this question.
Jordan, I don't know if you know, but Justin Thomas tweeted that he wouldn't be surprised if you hold it from the bunker there at the playoff. So he called it. What do you think about that?
I guess if you call something enough times and every once in a while one of them goes in. But that's nice. At least I think this one had good speed going in. I've always taken some crap from my peers about the John Deere one potentially going off the green or into the water or whatever. I think this one went in with good speed. I'll have to see it later. So I've got that going for me. But that's funny that he called that. I'm sure if I missed it, he would have called Berger's putt and he would have kept on going until someone actually made one of them. But it's cool that it worked out that way.
Did you call it? Did you think?
No, I knew that it was actually one of the easier bunker shots that you can have out here. If you chunk it, it kind of hits on the downslope and shoots there. And if you catch it solid, it'll hit into the upslope and check a little bit. And I saw that in regulation and knew that that was a good spot. But no, I mean, you never think those are necessarily going in. You're trying to make the right contact to get it somewhere in a 5-foot circle, which is, I think, my expectation on that. And then wait and see what Daniel does and try and force another hole was what was going through my head. And then when it went in, I mean, that was a tremendous bonus.
Greller was sort of laughing about the reaction that you guys had crashing into each other. How would you give the play-by-play on that?
I think I left-handed through, which I am left-handed, but I think I tossed my wedge, not even like tomahawk, like from the shaft, tossed it. And I don't know if it was in the bunker or the rough or where it went. And Michael, I was actually a little surprised by the jubilation from Michael. He was, I looked over, I think he had kind of turned around and like screamed. And normally he'd just kind of be like, have his hands up or something, right? He's more reserved. And he was screaming and it just made me want to scream louder. And then he jumped. And fortunately, we didn't like high five jump. We both went kind of for the little side bump, but it was cool. I mean, the ground was shaking. It was so loud. What an amphitheater. What a tremendous last four holes, finishing holes, where you can get the crowd super involved. This was probably my luckiest win, for sure. Absolutely, with the breaks I got today.
Jordan Spieth there. I didn't know he was left-handed.
Did I?
Yeah. Spieth now, after Tiger Woods, if we're talking since 1983, Spieth after Tiger Woods is only the second golfer since 83 to have double-digit tour wins before they turn 24. He's still only 23. That's his 10th PGA Tour win, led wire to wire.
I don't think there's any other player in the world right now could have won that tournament playing that kind of golf other than Jordan Spieth. You mentioned his putting, like even his putt in regulation on 18, which was about a 3-footer at most. it wasn't the Jordan Spieth of 2 years ago standing over it. You didn't trust that he was going to hold that. He looked incredibly nervous. His stance looked totally different. And like his brilliance was built on his putting for the last few years. That isn't there now. He is wild off the tee at times, particularly in final rounds, it seems. But it's his improvement from the middle of the fairway, I think, that seems to have made the difference. Like a dramatic improvement from being somewhere, was it in around the 80s?
Yeah.
In terms of rankings for greens and regulations and strokes gains and approach, to being up now in the top five.
Yeah, he said as much in that press conference. I listened to a good chunk of it. He's basically what the stats bear out, which is that he just doesn't quite know what's going on with the putting this year. 40th on tour, as I said, but he said he's never struck the ball better. And from the final round in the US Open, he's been, he said, just in a real sweet spot of ball striking, which then obviously stopped in the final round of the Travelers.
Yeah. So,
not that big a sweet spot.
That's a great thing for him as well, because we've spoken about this over the last couple of years of, well, what happens when the putting goes, as you sort of feel it inevitably will?
Yeah.
Well, he's found another way of winning golf tournaments. And I watched him, was it the Dean and DeLuca? He came second. It was a couple of weeks before the US Open. And he had a level par final round, and I was half watching it. And it was just like last Sunday night, where he was all over the place.
Right.
And I thought he's probably shot a 75, 76. They come in, the caption, Jordan Spieth, the only player today without a bogey. Like, how did this happen?
Yeah.
How do you do it?
Yeah, amazing. So that's left-handed Jordan Spieth, who knew with his 10th PGA Tour win. It was amazing. It's actually worth checking out the shots.
Second highest final round figures of the year.
Highest?
Mm.
Viewing figures?
Viewing figures.
Ah, wow, okay. Interesting.
Spieth, people get excited.
Hmm.
Well, the word filters through, and that's the joy of social media nowadays, that word just travels. There's something going on at the Travelers Championship. You better get your TV on. And I'd say half hour by half hour, it builds and it builds and builds. And then, of course, everybody want to stick around to see what happened on, in that playoff.
Mm. OK, that's Jordan Spieth. We're talking Rory McIlroy next. Ah, Rory. Same old story for Rory. Another great Sunday, a 64 on the Sunday. He had 17 greens in regulation. He says he has never struck the ball better. Looking back over this week, the strong point is that I'm driving the ball the best I ever had, including hitting my irons pretty good. So it's just a matter of sharpening up the short game, which is easier said than done. He tested, Philip Reed had this in the Irish Times, no fewer than five different putters prior to Saturday's third round. Mm-hmm. And he went on in that third round to have 33 putts, so it didn't overly work. And that meant another change for the final round when he went back to a blade-shaped putter. This all ahead of the Irish Open, the Scottish Open, the British Open. So three putter changes in 3 days.
That must be a record.
It's right up there, isn't it? Boo Weekly apparently changes putters all the time.
Three
as
times
often as he
in a weekend?
His underpants.
Yeah, he changes his putter like he changes his underwear.
So well, like how often is that?
Boo Weekly?
Yeah.
We hope once a tournament.
At least. So he started the week with the spider putter.
Which he had at the US
Then he
Open.
Moved to a mallet on the Friday. No. And he moved to the blade on the
No, he changed. He changed on days 2, 3 and 4.
All right, so he used the spider
2 days.
For the 2 days. And after those 2 days, of the 85 to make the cut, he was 80th of 85 in strokes gained putting.
As for my putting, we'll see. I'm not so sure, but my putting could not have been worse than it was for the first 3 days. So I went back to a putter that looked a little bit more familiar and that style of head shape that I have had most of my success with, just to see if it could conjure up any good feelings. So it felt pretty good.
It does make you question again why he signed the deal for every club in the bag. It reminds me of a club. It reminds you of your Scotty Cameron.
Mm.
Sign a deal that you can still use your Scotty Cameron.
Yeah. I think he's, I mean, I don't think a TaylorMade would have any great objections to that, because ultimately they're in the business of selling your 13 other clubs, really.
And well, I would think in this case they were making plans on selling an awful lot of spider putters.
That's a fair point. You've got Dustin
and
Johnson.
And those sales now, where are they?
Yeah.
He's ditched it already.
I did see people tweeting during the US Open that Rory is single-handedly killing sales of the spider putter.
Domination is based on the deal you've signed with him. He spoke in the build-up to Erin Hills about the difficulties in practicing as much as he would have liked because of his injuries, but that it allowed him to put an awful lot of work into a short game.
Yeah.
And now he's saying, well, my long game is better than it's ever been. I just need to tune up the short game.
Yeah, I mean, he says different things all the time. Like, he did do that interview a couple of weeks ago about how much he loved the new TaylorMade equipment and post, this is post the Masters, and they tested at various numbers and various equipment, and the numbers were better than ever. So unless post Masters, where his short game was very, very sharp, unless after the Masters he spent all his time trying to figure out the long game again, and so the short game has gone a bit flabbier. So you would hope now post this, he works like a dog on his putting and on his short game and gets back to what we saw at the Masters. Because Philip Reed had a great point as well. He wrote a very good article just about Rory and putting and Spieth and putting. And he makes the point that right now Rory's averaging 1.75 putts per, I presume it's per green. I'm not sure. But whatever the situation is anyway, he hasn't played enough rounds to have a ranking. But his 1.75 score is worse than the player ranked 205 in the world. So his putting's abysmal. And he made the point that back in 2014 when McIlroy won the Open and won the USPGA, those two majors in a row, he was 30th in overall ranking for putting. So it lends credence to the argument that he only has to be very average and he will win majors.
And the Bridgestone in between, didn't he?
Yeah. So and his putting was 30th around then.
Well, he's up in Port Stewart today. I presume he's probably going to spend a few days up there practicing and getting a bit of time on Lynx golf and getting his putting sorted for that. If his long game is in shape, as you say, it just needs to be average, his putting. If his long game is in the shape that it was when he was winning majors, he'll be fine. But when he doesn't even have enough rounds in to have a ranking, like, that has to be the biggest issue for him, that he's figuring things out on the course. And he's coming into, as we're saying now, the best part of the season, the most exciting part of the season, and he's still a little bit undercooked.
I know he's a streaky putter and always will be, but it is just so disappointing for such an amazing player that he still hasn't quite cracked this. He still hasn't got a putter he loves, got a stroke he loves. He's gone from working it out for himself to Dave Stockton to working it out for himself to Phil Kenyon. And like, if I'm Phil Kenyon now, I'm a bit worried looking at some of these performances and three different putters in 3 days. Like, can you say the Kenyon thing has ultimately worked? Probably not. I mean, I think he should still work with someone, but it's just increasingly now as he heads for 30 and 35, he's not going to become a better putter, I would feel. You're really just hoping for a couple more majors where he catches fire or is generally okay and around 30th in the field. But I don't know.
See, he has nothing to fall back on. There's no consistency. There's no bedrock of his putting stroke. Yeah. You don't know what he's doing from one turn to the next.
Yeah.
His coach would have been watching from afar, I'm sure, and seeing him change it three times over the course of a tournament with his head in his hands, thinking, where does this leave me? What have we worked on in the last month?
And try it five different putters on the Saturday.
And you can you trust the blade? So, all right, maybe it is the most similar to the Scotty Cameron and there's a nice feel to it, but you've had one brilliant round with it. Does that necessarily mean next Thursday when he turns up at Port Stewart?
That's the thing.
Maybe, like, that could have happened with the mallet, it could have happened with the spider putter. You'll always have one good round.
You don't even know what putter he'll show up with next Thursday for sure. He might hate it in the pro-am. Like, we're really at that point. So he's going to have to address it soon, hopefully. But I don't know. It's such a tricky thing. Like, I mean, he won't be the first player to struggle with his putting for his entire life, will he?
No, and the way Rory's career has gone, I think, it just shows the talent that everyone knows he has. That people aren't, I don't want to say writing him off, but aren't going deeper into his crisis. That really, it's been a struggle for 18 months. As you say, there's always something, but that it's just stalled. It is massively stalled, which is a shame. And again, you always have to have this caveat of, could turn up at Port Stewart next week and just rip the place apart.
Of course he could. That's Rory for now. Port Stewart is next week. We'll obviously be hearing more from him up close and personal across that week.
Before we leave this tournament, one more point. If you're in Daniel Berger's position, you're heading into a playoff. It's a huge tournament against Jordan Spieth. Who's the guy maybe you don't want sitting alongside you as you're watching Spieth come up 18? Is it the one guy that you've lost in your only other PGA Tour playoff to? Patrick Harrington, sitting there, big grin on his face, showing his phone to Berger, having a great old chat with him as he's preparing to go out and play in the playoff.
Was it possible to see what they were talking about?
No, not really.
Okay.
At first I thought, wow, his agent looks just like Patrick Harrington.
I would think Harrington could give him some good advice, no?
And sharpen his mind. He reminds Berger what happened. Was that the Honda Classic?
Yeah.
Reminds Berger what happened there. And Berger, you know, it steals him for what's to come. I can now relive the hurt that I experienced in that playoff defeat. It's not going to happen again.
I don't know. I just think with Harrington, of all people, he just wouldn't be able to help himself. Hey, remember what you did in our playoff?
See, what
maybe don't do that.
What you did wrong the last day.
Don't do that.
Yeah. Andreas Romero beat Sergio Garcia on the European Tour. That was pretty good as well.
On an invite.
In Germany over the weekend. Yeah, amazing stuff from him. We'll look ahead to this weekend's golf next. The Quicken's Loans. The Quicken Loans is on. This weekend, outside of Washington, D.C., Ricky Fowler leading the field. Justin Thomas is there. Patrick Reed is there. Kevin Chappell, Brennan Steele. Not an amazing field, you would have to say. It's the first time we're seeing Ricky Fowler since another top 10 at a major. And so in his press conference, they were asking him about yet another top 10 at a major. Yet another Sunday where you don't quite have your best stuff. Is there something mentally going wrong for you, Ricky?
There's probably been a few times. Where it hasn't been exactly either the right mindset or potentially getting behind the eight ball early and pushing a little bit too much from there instead of kind of letting things fall into place and letting things happen. So, that's something that helped me going into Sunday at the U.S. Open this year and just didn't get anything going. I played well. I felt very in control of the game. Tough conditions, and Brooks went out and played a great round. And unfortunately, like I said, I just didn't get anything going, but by no means was it a bad round.
So we felt it went okay. Alan Kavanagh did tweet us saying, "Oh, Ricky, all those tens of millions, Alison Stoke, your girlfriend, where did it all go wrong?" I mean, we're not saying Ricky Fowler's life is better than ours is, or that our life is better than Ricky Fowler's, obviously. I mean, he's definitely, as life experiences go, he's probably beating the three of us put together.
Just about.
Yeah.
Yeah, he wasn't going around Paris on his scooter.
You guys are always very quick to say things like that.
Put together. Unless you're living some kind of clandestine life away from work that I'm not aware of.
We accept you have a good life.
Yeah.
We're just not saying it's Ricky Fowler's life.
But
I mean, I would hazard a guess. I feel like I have a good guess of what your average day is like.
I may not be very happy living Ricky's life.
Yeah.
You know, I'd have to spend a lot of time away from home.
Sure. Alison Stoke joining you all the way. She's a pole vaulter. Did you see that?
I'm sure she is.
Oh, stop.
The second he said it, you could see his eyes light up.
He's a terrible man.
I'm happy with my life.
That's staying in. I'm not editing that to save you from yourself.
None of us are saying we're not happy.
I've wasted too much time in recent months editing you to save you from yourself. The stuff which has been left on the cutting room floor could end careers. Alison Stoker's staying in. Ricky Fowler's life is better than yours, and you can sit on that.
I'm allowed to argue the point.
You're not. You've done this before. You once debated over whether or not you'd swap places with Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, and I'm perfectly happy to have that debate. What I really don't get is that you two are so ready to just like lie down and acknowledge that other people's lives are better than yours.
Okay. Well,
it's called being in the real world.
Being realistic.
Well, I think being happy with your lot is very important.
Do you think you have the best life in the world? Whose life is better than yours?
Well, see, all of that's open to interpretation. It's not a black and white thing. There's no facts to it.
It is when it's you and me and Nathan. I mean, it might be open to interpretation if, you know, you're LeBron James and I'm Tiger Woods. Well, not Tiger Woods, Tiger's a bad example.
Well, you see, that's the bigger question. Would you swap your life right now for Tiger Woods' life right now?
Right now?
Right now.
And have to live his life for the next...
Yeah, with all the money, but, you know, with the addictions.
I think...
Of course you would.
I don't think so. I think time as well is our most valuable commodity. I'm not giving up 10 years.
Well, you wanted him to give up 20 years on Phil Mickelson.
Yeah, but well,
not 10 years as well, sorry.
But it's Dave's life.
I would be
there.
Getting what?
And Mickelson.
I would be getting about 10 years back if I swapped with Ricky, wouldn't I?
Well, you get a few back, yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, maybe that is something that you would factor in.
The point is, Ricky is going to win a major. Do we think there's some mental fragility here akin to what we thought Sergio had for a long time? I don't. Although I do enjoy Butch getting angrier with him every commentary he
Why
does.
Is he going to win a major?
He's too good a player not to. He's too good a player not to. And, crucially, he's so good around the greens. He's putting from 6, 7, 8, 9 feet. He just hammers them home. I feel that's where lads really, really struggle when they're not going to win a major. So I just think it's inevitable. I think he's too
good. Well, Garcia's win at Augusta has changed the narrative on that debate entirely, because you really can no longer sit back and say he's just never going to get it done, because we have been saying that about Garcia for so long, and then he does it so late in his career. Mm. Ricky Fowler has like 10, 12 years yeah. in hand yeah. when you compare him to Sergio. So yeah, there would have been a time where I would have said I don't see Ricky doing it, but he's just still so young.
Yeah.
I would say that Sergio, even though he wasn't winning majors, still won tournaments, regular tournaments, at a far higher rate than Ricky does. He generally hasn't won enough.
I'd accept that.
But to counter that, I don't think, and we touched on this last week, Ricky doesn't have any scar tissue from majors. He's never blown it. Mm. That's part of the problem with him. He's never put himself in a position to actually go and blow it.
That's an issue in itself, but you're right. He hasn't actually choked on the back nine of a major championship because he's never been close enough.
Patrick Reed, I just want to briefly mention, because he's in the top 3-4 in the betting. We were worried about him earlier in the season. He missed 3 cuts in a row, was in terrible shape, and now he has had an excellent US Open, finished 5th at the Travelers in the week just gone by. So it's been all gravy for the last couple of months for Patrick Reed, and they were asking him, why is that?
I think the biggest thing is just my swing's getting a little bit more consistent. There's a couple of things that we were working on that, I mean, really the same kind of stuff I've been working on for 2 years. But, you know, now it seems like on my bad days, the golf swing is closer than in the past. So, you know, instead of missing it 30 yards offline, you're missing it 15 yards offline. And anytime you can get your misses a lot more closer to the start lines, the better off you're going to be. And, you know, I think it's just kind of going into it a different way rather than going out with so high expectations that, you know, I have to shoot 65. I have to go win this week. If I don't, you know, it's a failed week. It is kind of put a little too much pressure on myself to go produce numbers rather than just go out and play golf. You know, I'll always know my expectations. That's to win every golf tournament, step up and play. I mean, but when you're out there playing, that's not what you can think about. You got to go out there and think about, okay, what are you trying to do? And that's to hit a quality golf shot. And if you do that, then add them up in the end.
He was saying as well, he sat down with TaylorMade and redid his clubs and got them fitted in a new way, and it's made a huge difference too. I was playing with a guy yesterday who was off 13 last year, and he's off 7 now. And well, one of the reasons, and he's a friend of the pod, so he'd probably be listening. One of the reasons was he changed golf club. He moved to Cove Golf Club, which made a big difference. But he also got fitted for clubs for his 40th birthday, and said it made a big difference as well. I'm not fitted. I always feel my swing is too much in flux and changing all the time. I haven't settled on a swing yet to get fitted, so I'm waiting. But I mean,
maybe for your 40th birthday.
I could still be saying the same thing in 10 years. Oh, you know, making a few changes to my swing, so I'm just going to hold off. It's probably just worth doing, even if you are changing your
swing. It's definitely worth doing. But
even if you're changing your swing.
Even if you're changing your swing, I think, because at least then you know that is one imponderable that you've taken out of the equation.
Yeah.
That you don't have to, well, the clubs are perfect for me.
Yeah.
It's not based on your swing.
Is it not based on your swing?
No, I assume it's based on your height.
But yeah, it's your dimensions.
Yeah.
Oh, I was pretty sure that, like, if you go to 4 Golf at Clean Castle, they'll get you to hit balls, they'll look at TrackMan, and they will suggest different weights of club, different shapes of head to suit your swing speed. So if you dramatically slower increase your swing speed, it would affect what clubs are right for
maybe,
you.
Maybe.
Yeah, no, it's pretty scientific these days. It's not just like that lad's 6'5", let's give him an extra 3
inches. Yeah, what loft should you be using on your woods, for example, on your wedges?
Yeah, it depends on your swing speed.
The type of shaft you're using.
Yeah, if you fight a slice versus fight a draw, these are things which could change very easily with a few lessons. So I've never quite committed to it. But
I think you need to be playing a certain amount of golf
yeah.
to commit to it. Like, I will need to be playing 50, 60 times a year before I would consider paying out for that.
Well, how many times? Ricky Fowler's life, yeah. You'd be able to play.
It's true. How many
I'm
times
pretty sure he's custom fitted. Well, I've played 3 times in the last month. I would say in 2017 I will play golf 15 times.
Yeah, your life's way worse than ours even. Let alone Ricky Fowler.
How often are you playing golf?
I'll play 15, maybe 20. Getting out to Luckless
Town
a bit more.
About that, like.
My life beats both your lives.
Well, I beg to differ. Throw kids in. Well, you could argue either side of that one.
We're also no longer riding around Paris on scooters.
Yeah.
Those days are gone.
It was amazing. Open to France, $7 million prize fund. McDowell started quite well. He likes his French competitions, 2-under. Tommy Fleetwood is 4-under, leaders on 5-under. The field includes Fleetwood, John Rahm, Martin Keimer's there, Bernd Fiesberger, Alexander Noren, Graham McDowell, Shane Lowry is there, he's going out this afternoon, Thomas Peters is there. So it's a decent field. That's what $7 million will do for you.
So for the next 4 weeks, probably by habit you're starting with the PGA Tour, for the next 4 weeks, the stronger field is in Europe.
Amazing, isn't it?
So as I say, we go French, Irish, Scottish, and then into the Open Championship. John Rahm, this is first time playing on European soil as a professional. And obviously he's going to be at the Irish Open next week as well. It's a big week for McDowell. He's not actually qualified for the Open Championship.
I didn't realise that.
So there's three places available in France, Ireland and Scotland. Mm-hmm. If you finish in the top 10 and you haven't already qualified, you get in. But both McDowell and Paul Dunne are both trying to qualify. You sort of just assume that McDowell is always going to be there. I guess his exemption is gone. Well, it's gone a couple of years now. It's a five-year exemption from...
Would have went in 2015.
Yeah. And he's been... He's sort of stopped the rot this year, but...
He's back in the top 10 strokes gained putting, which is customarily how he's got to where he has thus far. So he needs to keep that going.
Ryder Cup venue for next year, isn't it?
Yeah.
So great, we might pay a little bit more attention
best
to it again.
Best finishing holes on the European Tour. The last 3-4 holes are just stunning to watch. Right. I'd say it's one of those problems with the Ryder Cup. 17 and 18 are incredible. They'll probably go there twice all week.
Yeah, it's true. It's a good point. Okay, we're about done unless anyone wants to add anything else.
No, I'm happy with my lot, Joe.
I'm clearly thrilled.
The only one in the room that's willing to bat for their own lives.
Just admit you hate your life like everyone else.
I'm not saying I don't hate my life.
The admission at the end.
I'm just saying, like, Ricky Fowler's life seems pretty good.
Yeah.
But it's always you that poses the question. No, no. Would you swap your life for this person's? What is the insecurity?
I only pose it to you because you're the only person who says no.
Exactly.
But are you suggesting that you press pause on your life right now and all the things in your life and you say, I'll leave all that behind me, never see it again?
Well, clearly I can't leave my parents and my girlfriend.
Exactly.
And all
well, that is part what you're of saying the is argument. That when you're 13, you have Ricky Fowler's talent and you go on to live his life.
Yes. That's a better life. Like, it's still you, it's still your friends, it's still your parents. I'm trying to think of the logistics of this. But we'll still let you have
so
your
parents.
So if
I swap lives and Ricky's mother came up to me, I wouldn't be like, who are you?
Yeah. I mean, it gets tricky. You have to just allow some manoeuvre for the debate to work.
There are some holes in your argument.
Oh, sure.
I have one other story. I don't know if you see this. Steph Curry
has
been given an invite to play on the web.com tour.
Yeah.
He's a 2 handicap in America. So
I saw a swing. I mean, it looked okay. It looked, I mean, obviously far better than the average. I would have said it looked like the swing of a 6 or 7 or 8 handicap Irish player.
So he obviously plays in all the big pro-ams and plays at Pebble Beach. Jerry Rice played in this tournament 3 times. A lot of the current players are up in arms about this.
I can't imagine.
You're taking somebody's place. I don't really go along with it. It's an invite.
Yeah.
You can't earn it. They're not going to give it to some 20-year-old who's just trying to make a breakthrough.
Yeah.
And it is more publicity for a tournament.
That's the thing.
Than ever before.
It means a bit more money for people.
Mm.
No harm. So Steph Curry, the web.com tour. What, imagine he won. Alrighty, we're done for this week. So next week, actually, we're not too sure what the schedule is going to be, but there'll be special podcasts. We're going up to Port Stewart. Nathan's going up Thursday. I'll be up Thursday evening or Friday morning. Fionn's going to come. And we'll record maybe a couple of pieces and hopefully get some interviews with some golfers knocking around. So it should be good. So we'll talk to you then. Good luck. All my exes were